Well, my name is Michael Apple. I've been involved in various ways with ICPJ since I think the late 1980s. I don't remember exactly, in all honesty. Early on, mostly involved with the Racial and Economic Justice Task Force. I served on the board for a few years and then was very involved when ICPJ focused on low-income housing, which eventually culminated in the creation of Religious Action for Affordable Housing, RAH, and have been involved with RAH originally on the board and now more peripherally. But I also have worked in low-income housing here in Ann Arbor in various ways, but most importantly, I think, for the last 20-plus years, have worked at Avalon Housing, which is a low-income housing provider here in town, and we partnered with RAH. So I guess the sort of the big arc that for me starts in the late 1980s, as I said, had to do with ICPJ's ongoing commitment to affordable housing in Ann Arbor. And I know it predates me greatly, and hopefully some of the other speakers have caught some of that around 60s and 70s and early 80s, I'm sure. I know housing's been an issue in Ann Arbor, and I have no doubt ICPJ was deeply involved in it. We were involved at that point through the Racial and Economic Justice Task Force, since housing affordability and housing segregation issues just overlap incredibly with racial and economic justice issues. And the first things we were doing were really presentations to congregations. I went and pulled old documents to try to prepare for this. I'm finding from the early 90s, not really workshops, but presentations we took to congregations that focused on Habitat and SOS community services. I think it was SOS Crisis Center at that point, and Avalon as organizations that worked with congregations to do different kinds of affordable housing. What I always liked about ICPJ's particular window on the issue was because we weren't a direct service provider, because we didn't have to sort of change our focus based on, honestly, funding and public policy issues that were made work possible, we could always focus on the social justice aspect of housing, on what it did for our community or what it didn't do for our community, the effects of segregation ranging from, you know, housing segregation obviously creates school segregation and it just builds up from there. So ICPJ was always able to talk about those issues throughout all of that time. And then that was a very natural fit. I think the creation of RAH and the decisions we made to not just give it a different name, but really take ICPJ's housing work and build it into a bigger community coalition that in some ways didn't give ICPJ full credit for the role it played early on. But I think we all understood that there were reasons for that. There was certainly a lot of conversation about it. Because we started out with easily half or more of the key activists in RAH being there because we had been involved with Interfaith Council for Peace and Justice in various ways. And looking back, the decision to expand beyond just calling it the ICBJ Task Force had to do with sort of understanding that ICPJ, for good in my mind, but ICPJ has a certain reputation. It's an activist organization. It's viewed as willing to tackle issues that might divide the community and certainly don't necessarily unite the entire religious community. And I think there was an understanding that housing and the ability especially to raise significant funds for housing meant being able to step outside of that activist's role a little bit and try to, having created some common ground, maybe create a space where people who wouldn't be entirely comfortable with everything ICPJ did or represented joining us in an effort for housing. But that, it's a difficult thing to do, because the truth is it was ICPJ's energy and focus and commitment that laid the groundwork for RA. And we acknowledged that early on. I found the minutes from RA's founding meeting in which we, you know, adopted a mission statement and charged a group to go incorporate and create bylaws. You know, but one of the things we did was to have a formal affiliation with ICPJ approved. I don't know what that meant, per se, except we did ask ICPJ to maintain the books for us initially. And there was some sense that if ICPJ was going to have responsibility for the books, we needed to acknowledge that. But that was really a way of tying together these initiatives. And there's, you know, a couple of names, Susan McGarry and Mary Browning, folks who were deeply involved in ICPJ, whose names just are there throughout all of it. Jim Mogensen, similarly. Niall Harper really stepped forward as, I guess I'll say, the energy that said, let's try to do something bigger and different than we've done before. Niall certainly was familiar with ICPJ and had interacted with it, but that wasn't his home base, so to speak. And I think he helped us think through, you know, why would you do something under ICPJ's name, and why would you choose to do it differently? And in terms of just anecdotes, RA, of course, is quite a name to have to say with in front of a group of people who don't know it. And I have to say, Niall's ability to step forward, open his arms, and say RA in a way that made it an encouraging, inviting name. He must have been an amazing preacher in his day, because there was just something about the way he said it that I can't do with a straight face even. But we moved forward. I did. That's the problem. You just heard me doing my best impression of it all. But RA really was very successful. And, you know, we set out to do some things that were very concrete, to raise large sums of money. And our first capital campaign was $300,000, which is a large sum, and a very large sum if you look at sort of how ICPJ looked at fundraising. And so, again, we stepped outside of that. And actually, at that point, we even realized that the fiduciary responsibility through ICPJ, combined with RA being a relatively new organization, probably wasn't the right mix for a large capital campaign, and we asked the Ann Arbor Area Community Foundation to become the fiduciary for the capital fund monies. And again, that's because when you're asking people to suddenly give in the thousands or tens of thousands of dollars, they like to see it going to an organization that has a track record of stewarding tens of thousands of dollars. And that was a wonderful partnership for us. And RA continues to this day. I always describe it, especially through, you know, a pretty tough period for fundraising over the last 5-6 years, RA's been the energizer bunny. They their goals might have been modest compared to the kinds of fundraising, that capital fundraising that you might see for other organizations, but every couple of years, they would set a campaign goal somewhere between $50,000 and that original $300,000, and they met their goal every time. And they did it the old-fashioned way, by raising from congregational social action committees and individuals. And it's just been a remarkable organization with a lot of staying power. The sort of projects that RA has been able to support have varied over the number of years. The original capital campaign helped Avalon Housing purchase land on the north side of town that is now where Carrotway Apartments are built, and we purchased the land from food gatherers who used the proceeds from the sale to help build their new distribution warehouse. So it was a wonderful win-win collaboration for some local nonprofits. Another $100,000 from that campaign was used as seed money for a local community land trust, which actually wasn't able to get off the ground in the end, but this was money to help take a look at whether that model would work, especially for low-income home ownership. But since then, Ra has done a number of follow-up campaigns. They've helped Avalon with some of our supportive services. They've helped another nonprofit in town, Michigan Ability Partners, with their housing. They've worked with prisoner reentry initiatives, which the state promoted to try to address issues of recidivism and the ability of people being released from prison to reintegrate in the community. And Ra was very supportive there. And so that's been the ongoing work that Ra's done. It's also worth noting my involvement in ICPJ arose from my prior involvement in Jewish communal organizations, most importantly, New Jewish Agenda for many years, and then more recently, Beth Israel Congregation.
I'm Roger Poole. I'm a United Church of Christ minister, and I first got to know or became acquainted with ICPJ, I think back in the early to mid-1980s. I had been in the Philippines. My family and I, my wife and I taught in a college in the southern Philippines on two occasions, and was asked by the United Church of Christ to visit the Dole and Del Monte pineapple and banana plantations because they'd heard that there were lots of labor issues. And I went down there and spent a week with union organizers out in the fields, living in NEPA huts with workers, and discovered that there was really a system of slave labor in the industrial agriculture of, Dole called itself the IBM of pineapples, and like I was out with pineapple workers when crop dusting airplanes with herbicides and pesticides would come down over us, and we all had to take handkerchiefs out of our pockets and cover our heads, and everybody bent down, and you could feel the mist coming down on you. Anyway, I had a phone call from someone I did not know who said, "Hi, my name is Russ Fuller. My wife Barbara and I were wondering if you could come from Lansing, where we were living, down to Ann Arbor and do a presentation to a group through Interfaith Council for Peace and Justice." And so that was really my first link. I'd never heard of ICPJ before that, but spent an evening down at Memorial Christian Church meeting and sharing about my experience with industrial agriculture down in the Philippines. I moved to Ann Arbor in 2000 as the new director of Interfaith or Ecumenical Center and International Residence, which is still here in Ann Arbor. And Niall Harper, who you referenced, had been the director before me. And so I was working with international students and from like 25 different countries at any one time who were attending U of M. And as we worked with the students, lots of economic justice issues came up and everything. And so in my first year, sometime in probably 2001, I found myself on the steering committee of ICPJ and getting more involved in a range of issues. And so we began talking about global economic justice and what kind of work we might team up and do together to both raise consciousness and make a difference. We met together for a couple years, Barbara and Russ Fuller, Jim Mogensen, Barbara Weicks. I'm looking at a list here. I mean, just a number of people from ICPJ at different points were involved in our discussions, and we did occasional forums, and it connected with the work happening around Honduran and Central American human rights and School of the Americas, and there were just overlaps with so many different areas that we formed a globalization task force. We found ourselves trying to grapple with how to focus, and we decided that we were going to do a large conference in 2005 around this range of issues. I think it was Barbara Fuller who found that Church World Service had issued a call for people from around the world and around the country to cooperate ecumenically for fair trade and for just trade agreements and an economy that serves life. And so we began to put together a conference. Jason Crosby on the staff of ICBJ and I pretty much chaired that effort. And so we worked together and pulled together a conference, April 8 and 9 in 2005, based here in Ann Arbor at First Presbyterian Church. Our keynote speaker was David Corton, who had written the book a year or two earlier, When Corporations Ruled the World. And so he flew in from Seattle as our keynote speaker. We also had Charlie Kernahan, who was and probably still is the director of the National Labor Committee in Washington, or in New York City. And Charlie was investigating and doing work around sweatshops and in garment industries in Central America and in places like Bangladesh, Haiti, Dominican Republic, El Salvador, other places like that. And so he came in as a speaker. Also, Rajashree Wagrai, who was the Church World Service representative to the United Nations and was project director at Harvard University of an effort around women in labor. And so she was one of our speakers. And then David Bonnier, who had been a member of Congress for 26 years. He was a Democratic whip in the House of Representatives and from Michigan. And Dave Bonnier was someone who had led the effort to raise concern about NAFTA, around workers' rights, around environmental issues, around human rights issues, and all kinds of things like that. So he led some of the opposition to NAFTA and was and still is the chair of American Rights at Work and is also on the board of Public Citizen. And so he came and was one of our speakers as well. So we had kind of an amazing cast of speakers. We had hoped for 125 people to come. We were doing we thought we were thinking big. Over 350 people showed up for these 2 days of conference here in Ann Arbor. And so it was really a very highly charged time. There was a little bit of personal drama. In the week before all this happened, all of a sudden, I woke up one morning and couldn't get out of bed. My legs didn't work. My arms didn't work. And I ended up in the neurological unit at U of M Hospital with something called Guillain-Barré syndrome, sometimes called French polio, a neurological thing. And so I was in the hospital in a room right next to the intensive care unit in neurology because they were afraid I'd go into respiratory failure. And I was sitting there with a laptop on my lap and was on the phone talking to David Corton and working on this conference from my hospital room. And simultaneously, Jason Crosby, ICPJ staff, calls me, gets me on my cell phone. I'm in the hospital. He says, Roger, you won't believe what's happening, but I'm in the emergency room, and they're going to admit me. And so here we were about 5 days before this big event, and both of us were in the hospital and struggling. Well, long story short, Jason got out within a day and was back at work. And the day the conference started, I insisted on being discharged. And so my wife picked me up and drove me directly with a wheelchair in the trunk to the church where the conference was going to happen and wheeled me in. And two people had to help me stand up at the lectern to welcome people to this gathering and introduce the speaker the first evening. And then I did similar things the next day as well. But anyway, that was just a little side drama, personal drama.
You're all right now, though.
But I'm okay now, yeah. Or that, yeah, I mean, that took about 9 months of therapy, but I was okay after that. So, and so anyway, that was a significant coming together of a lot of peace and justice people working on globalization, economic justice issues, food security, industrial agriculture, and the corporate rule of the world, and focusing on local economies, economies that work for people, and all kinds of really ongoing significant issues like that. We continued here in Ann Arbor area for about 2 years. And what we did was we had usually a monthly breakfast where we had a speaker and over breakfast and anywhere from a dozen to 30 people came. And before the morning, before things were over, everybody would take paper, pen, envelopes, and we did advocacy in terms of either writing letters to the editor or to legislators about whatever issue of globalization we were talking about that particular day. Beyond that effort, I mean, I'm just pleased with ICBJ today, with everything from the effort around food security, the concerns and work on the Pacific trade agreements that are being debated right now, all kinds of issues like that, I think continue to live in the spirit of what we tried to do in that conference back in 2005.